This is my interview, oral history, with Yi Nui Win in Yangon at his beautiful teak-built home on 2nd of May 2018. So, Yi Nui Win, thank you. Nui Win, thank you for seeing me. So, you've had a fascinating life, and perhaps we could start at the beginning.
My life started from a very humble beginning. I'm the youngest of from the first marriage of my mother to one brother and one sister. And second marriage has got one sister, and then me included, four boys. So it is a bit of a male-dominated, I think. My father came down from Natoji, Upper Burma. The Upper Burmans are considered to be very hardworking, very tenacious. And when I checked, it was the beginning when our monarchy collapsed, and then foreign element came, and then Lower Burma fell into the hands of British colonial powers. And then they began to open the forest lands, and the Lower Burma were given to those migrants, internal migrants from Upper Burma who came down, and then they said, okay, you can make this rice field, cut the trees for free. And then they got deforested the area now known as Chaitla. My grandfather used to tell me that there were, during their young days, there were tigers and then elephants, Lower Burma. So they got the land. And then gradually, they began to increase, expand land, become landlords. About 6,000 acres of land in that area. It was during the beginning from the British time. So they were concerned to be.
When are you saying that? Is that what years roughly? The
1888 was the collapse of British rule. Should be after that.
Because the collapse of the monarchy.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
So they do migrate.
Yeah.
The whole village from the Natoji to China. It's many hundreds of miles on foot.
On foot.
On foot. They don't have they may have bullock carts and all this, but gradually they came down and then they settle, and then they began to grow rice after cutting the forests. They acquire their own and then buy. These people are very enterprising people. They save money. So by the time I was born, or before, they were quite rich. they're landlords. With many animal, drought animal, buffalo, and all this. When I was born, at the age of my mother, 40 plus, about her menopause, in the village culture, a lady of whose menopause age have a pregnancy, she feel a little bit uncomfortable to live in the village. And village culture, from upon these people, this is village culture. So she asked my father to build a big tent, wooden, a big hut outside the village where she stay and I was born.
You were the last child?
The last child. Away from the brown eyes of the village, particularly the village women and things. So I'm really, I was born on the in the paddy fields, and then, you know, when they, because in the village culture, when they bury the, you know, umbilical cord,
yes,
like a birthplace, it is in the field.
Like the afterbirth,
so yes,
they
yes,
bury.
Yes, bury in the paddy field. So what I want to say is that it is, now looking back, it is something interesting, even strange.
When was it?
I'm coming to this point. Now, when I ask my mother is illiterate. The father, because in those days, girls are not to learn. They are to learn the, only the household, to look after, you know, household things.
Domestic duties.
Domestic duties. And they are Burmese tradition. They are the leaders of the house. Not paternistic, the maternal. Although, from outwardly, looks like the man is the head of the family. But it was created as such. But the real leader is mother. She decides, she keeps the pocket, no?
I think in the West, probably, it's not too dissimilar.
That's true, that's true. And then, so, whenever the ceremonial things, donations and all this, the housewife keep the man in front. But everything what he must talk about, donation, the village affairs, has been briefed by them. So the leadership, maternal leadership, doesn't seem to be in the forefront. But the decision makings of the so-called, you know, the head of the family, we are briefed. Even influenced by the mother. So I'm the one.
So when you asked her, she's illiterate, when you asked her about when you were born, what happened?
I will tell you. So I said that she's illiterate, but huge memory. Because when you are illiterate, you commit everything into memory. So the memory is like this. So when I ask Mama, tell me when, when the was a huge earthquake of Pegu, see, Pegu earthquake. In those olden days, they always relate to the big events as a landmark. Mama, can you tell me the year?
No idea.
For them, they don't care about the year, the month, or whatever. They don't care. Only after many years, I said, Mama, you know, in the Buddhist calendars, the birth cut certificate on the palm leaf.
Yeah.
It was 1933. The Salmon, it's something like October.
But do you think that's true? It could have been 1930, it could have been 19 some other year. Do you think it's accurate?
Accurate, roughly.
Yeah. You might be older than you think.
But here comes. So, when I register in one of the top-notch schools, government schools, they call it government high school, then I gave all these papers. When the papers were given, my birthday was 36, not 33. And then I was a bit curious. I asked the teacher who registered. Teacher, I was considered to be, my birthday was 33. Shut up. You are a little bit, during British time, we have no education. Or Japanese time, we have no education. So she tried to add, but instead of 33, 36, to say, otherwise, to be eligible for some government examination, there is age limit. So she, you know,
made you younger.
Younger.
To help you.
That's correct. And it worked. It worked hugely. So, and then, unlike these days, she decides, or the headmaster decides, the life of the students. They don't have to go to the ministry and all this. So, this is my birthday. Officially 1936. My mother's calendar, according to the Pegu and the earthquake history of the country, one of the biggest Pegu earthquake when the Bagura was destroyed. So?
33. So what was it like growing up in that household at that time?
As I said, a Mitanna dominant society. The husband, when I was born, I will give you the name of why. Mui
Win.
Mui is either it is directly meaning money or silver. When I was a little younger, my eldest brother tell to my mother, "Hey, Mimi, Mama, why don't you give this young man a name, Mr. Money, Mr. Silver, after the name of one very rich man, we also can mean rich.
Rich or silver.
Yeah, rich or silver or money. from the village of my father. So they wanted their youngest brother to be rich. So Mao Mui, my original name is Mao Mui, the first one.
Yeah.
So when I gave this name to my teacher, he said, hey, this is Jiang Li name, village name, since she put the win.
She created the other name.
She gave the, so my name is very rich. My mother's the family name and my teacher, because in our cultural value judgment, teachers and as you know, the parents are in the five pedestrians we pray every day. So when I ask, teacher, my name is, come on, shut up, right? It is, your name is very jungly name. So as he put it, so, and the in English translate, it became the silver bright.
Silver bright, winner's bright.
Yes, yeah. Bright.
So your family was still well-to-do at that time, right?
And the, here comes the first impact of the, when I, after my birth, few years, the government, the very socialistic government, during this independence.
But the British hadn't left.
No.
Yeah.
But when the government, the local politicians, because of the lands were, by that time, they were in the hands of the Indian Chittias.
Yeah, the Chittias, the moneylenders.
That's true.
Yeah.
So they wanted to take back this from the Chittias. And then they passed the law. It was much later. They passed the law that landlords cannot hold more than 25 acres a family. From 5,000, 6,000, they become all of a sudden landless. Here comes the beginning of my life. I have to struggle from that day on, from the landlord's son, rich landlord's son, to landless pauper. Not great.
You had 25 acres.
25 acres, but must split in the family.
Okay.
And then these 25 acres, you know, landlords being landlords, they don't really know how to operate. They get to do
the, other people were working over.
They're working for them. And at the end of the season, they collect. Yeah. And then it was 1948. I will tell you about the before Indian Japanese time.
Yes, that'd be interesting.
Although I grew up in the village, and then a town or city, China. Which is fishing town, fishing city. I grew up, then I, from the very beginning, I wanted to know more than what is available in the village or in the town. Curiosity. And then here comes the role of monastic education. My first education, monastic education, was from the monks, religious recitations. But looking back, and then they told me that I was good. So when you are, I have a relationship, family relationship with a chief monk. So I was very young of age. The chief monk weekly or bi-weekly newspapers come from the cities to the village, and village means to the monastery. I was given the duty to read aloud on the day when the village has come for to Sabbath day. I have to read. From the top, this paper was established in Georgia, until all the, including all the advertisements, down to the last. So I began to read.
And read. How old would you have been then, do you think?
I would think it will be about 8-9 years. So young.
So giving the information to the village about what's happening.
Yes, I'm sort of announcer, reading aloud. And then the chief monk was listening very keenly. If I make a mistake, he will correct. So it is a part of the education. No? I didn't know a word of English, although I wanted to. Because the head of the village was a distant relative of my mother, their cousins. He was a forward-looking man, tall, handsome, and he has his own raisin bullockart. Beautiful, no? Like you have got a Mercedes in the city, no? Beautiful two bullockarts, left and right, and then he used to go. And then he brought one teacher from the city to educate his sons. Five. The daughter was not in there. The youngest about my age. So being the head man, who captured some robbers, before was given a gun, the double-barrel gun.
He caught some rebels.
Oh, yes. Not rebels. He called it dacoits.
Oh, dacoits are bandits.
Bandits.
Yeah.
He could catch them. So the government, British government, rewarded him with the inscription on the barrel, the gun. And he used to go around the village with the one who carried a gun.
And he's the only one allowed to carry a gun? It was otherwise not allowed?
No, he is the only one who is given the duty to carry. The headman, my great uncle, from my mother's side, he didn't touch. Why I tell this story is, I like this sort of authority in the village. And he was also Ayurvedic medicine man.
Ayurvedic, yeah.
In those days we don't have the modern medicine.
Sure.
This is administration. Medicine man, and then it's very good.
This is your uncle,
or
great uncle.
Yeah, great. Not direct.
Okay.
But
through your mother's side.
Yes, from my mother's. I think distant. Let's say distant. Okay. Why I'm telling you is he brought one English teacher to the village. So in those days, it is very advanced idea, to bring his own private teacher to the village and teach
Children.
Yeah, his children. The school, the class was in the monastery, one of those empty monasteries. And then we young boys, poor men, poor family children, we play around. But my ear, I don't know, my ear was what the teacher was
listening.
Listen. What is it? We call it English. I didn't know even a word of A, B, C or what. But I heard the teachers was telling, C, A, D, get, ciao. Baby animal, cat. I copy. How I copy? I'm without knowing an English alphabet, I write with a charcoal, wood charcoal, on the side of this building. Cat in Burmese. Equal, I said, ciao. This is the first time I learned English. And from then on, I become a very, very well-read young man without going to proper classes. Because after the British, the Japanese come, and we have no school.
So what? Tell me a little bit about what happened to the family during the Japanese time.
Family.
Yeah, what happened? I mean, did the Japanese come to your village, or did you have to move away? Or?
Oh, they come. But we were so far flung the edges of the civilization, let's call it.
You're far south?
Yes.
Near the sea?
Yes. Not not near the sea, but in the delta area, wet land, and farmland. So the Japanese are not interested. What they are interested in is the big cities. But they touch in a way. They touch in a way to the village life. Harsh, very harsh.
How? What do you mean by that?
Peter, when I become a senior diplomat, whenever I go to many countries, we young diplomats, we drink, we eat, we talk. And whenever I met the Japanese, we become really friendly. And now I sit here with you, but I can never forget what you have done to our people during these 5 years.
So what did you experience?
Not my personal experience, almost negligible, but I saw the way they killed, and then my elder brothers, they joined the resistance. So the stories come back, you know, how they treated those people who were caught. For Japanese, I still have this at the back of my mind. If the emperor will say rise, they will rise. Their reaction is Robotnik. In the name of the emperor, they will rise. I said, you might do also to my friends, Japanese diplomat. No, we have changed. No. Inside of your psyche, you still have. If MacArthur will not take your emperor out, stand together in front of the international media and show that your emperor is a man, a human being, you will still think that he's the son of the descendant of the sun and all this will Hirohito, it's during the time of Hirohito. You will follow. If he told you to rise, you will rise.
It could happen again.
didn't happen.
And but they cancelled all school during the time they were here.
Who?
The Japanese.
No, they are not. It is a short period of time when they come. They try to settle and then establish Japanese schools and all this, but they don't have enough time. Because we started already our resistance. So resistance and the British on the Indian side of the border. So they could not settle down. They tried to bring their educated people to Burma and convert us into the pro-Japanese
sphere.
No, we didn't have the cultural level. So we, our young people, including I lost two brothers in resistance.
Did you? Two of your brothers?
Yes. And then they become heroes in the local. They will ambush the Japanese when they were moving around. This is a hard time, no? Whereas in the cities like Rangoon, there were bombardments and all this. My wife came from the other side of the river, Rangoon River, so she could hear, she could see all these destruction. But we were saved by the distance and the interest, the military interest in that area. Because of rice field, they are not interested. They are interested. The main thing of the main idea of Japanese military leadership is to get more resources from this area, from Malaysia, from Singapore, and all this area, Burma included. So.
I thought the food might be interesting. The rice was valuable as food for the to feed the soldiers,
but the distance became so they focus on the valuable assets,
the minerals, mining,
oil, and for military effort.
Yeah,
mainly for military effort.
So after the Japanese left, you were by then 33. So they left at what, 44, 45? So you were already 12.
So that's correct. Then I started my real education. I didn't know kindergarten and first, second, third. So then after the independence comes the insurgencies. Almost together. So the village life was not safe. People began to migrate to the population centers like Rangoon, Mandalay, and all these. So there were many slums. People come and where you got some materials, and this is your place. And you walk. And my sister, my eldest sister, from my mother's first marriage, was here already. Very enterprising woman. So she, and then later she said, bring my youngest son, and then about 46, 47, I came to Rangoon. And straightway, here comes the strength of my family. We like education. After I landed in Rangoon, maybe 1 week, my sister, eldest sister, took me to the nearest school, which is a monastic school, monastery. And this was my beginning of formal education.
And they were free, were they? To go, the monastery schools were free?
Free. Even sometimes we were given food. So it was the interim period of the government school and then the monastic, like now, monastic school. The beauty with the head of my CRO, who went to India, to, you know, all the Sri Lanka and the Silo during his young days, education. He speaks fluent Hindi, fluent English.
This is the monk teacher.
The monk teacher. I copy him.
Were you the only child in the family that was interested in education? Were your brothers interested in...
Unfortunately, no. I think they have to earn a living.
Because you were the youngest.
Youngest, so I could afford. And then they encouraged. And they saw in me, in their youngest brother, you know, the flame to learn. Why the when I was before you came to Rangoon, the chief monk took me as the reader. Maybe he saw in me I cannot. Because in those days, like now, schools, you have to learn by heart, repeat.
Like a parrot.
Yeah, like a parrot. No. Some people, they will get reset like a parrot without incisive trying to find the value. No, we... Of course, you have to give reputation, and in the reputation, then they will analyze. This is the meaning. This is the hidden meaning. This is the obvious meaning. You know, they have the Buddhist monastic schools, they have. So I went through, I learned reading Burmese very, very young. Then I began to pass, when I hear English being taught in the, by the headman's children, I got it. Other boys of the same age, they don't care. But I say, Jiao, the cat is Kanye, not in the Burmese alphabet. I started the English teaching. Later, when I was sent to Rangoon and then sent to this the monk, whatever given to me, I learned. Like a monastery, I consumed like a
sponge.
Yes. From the top, you know, we even the, among friends, we could be, hey, don't tell me, don't read me. Open the book. What is the page? What is the first stanza? Read only the first word. That is...
Competitions between you.
That's true. And even, not only from left to right, even the reverse.
So you have a photographic memory, or...?
I don't know. They said, the teachers used to tell me that you have got a good memory. This is good enough. And then when, after this monastery, the monastery school, fourth grade, the beginning, I never knew first grade, second, sit government examination, fourth grade. And I went. I passed.
And are you in the right class, or are you in a class, you know, like were you were treated like you were born in 1936, but you were really born in 1933?
That's correct.
So were you old for your class, or? Were you old for your class? You know what I mean? Like the other kids in their class were probably all born in 1936.
No. Before entering into the government high school, my age was 33.
Oh, you got to change back.
Yeah. No, the teacher changed. I don't know the idea of... This is the teacher I still worship. When I asked the teacher, because of curiosity, I'm 33. Shut up. Because she saw that by the time I become a graduate, I'll be overaged. Cannot be eligible for, you know, government examination, like foreign service examinations. This sort. Beautiful, no? Beautiful. And then...
So you went to the government school in fourth grade and passed.
I passed fourth grade. And then I went to the... We were not very far from the, let's say, Memanai, Uisara Road. There's a quarter. And the other side is a government high school of good repute. During the British time, it was the only school. We don't have colleges and all that. It was
the best.
Pre-college teaching school. So I went there to register. As you know, my mother is
illiterate,
and my elder sister who looked after me also didn't read. So I went there to their school myself with the paper, which showed I passed the examination. When I went to the school, even I dare not use a slipper inside the school with the reverence. So I talked to my wooden clock. You know that the wooden slipper?
That's what you used to wear?
Oh, yes. Poor man's. So I took it. And then the school results. And then the headmaster, tall and all that. He said, son, what can I do for you? See, Ali, I wanted to
register.
Oh, it's late. It's a school registration is closed. Because I even don't know that such regulations. But I said, I told him, very simple, maybe pathetic. Yeah, I'm here to learn. You know, when you talk to the educator, the teacher, the young, maybe a wretched, and then with this, I wonder, learning is what the teachers are for, am I right? So he touched. Immediately he said, his assistant, Teacher Sue, Sue. Hey, Teacher Sue, come have a look, see. Something pathetic, one who wanted to learn. The school register is closed. And this teacher, beautiful, young, okay. What can I enroll him? From that day on, every examination I stood first in the class. Fifth, sixth, yeah, you know.
The rest of your education.
Yes.
Your ducks, we call it.
That's
you
true.
Top the class.
Yes.
Wow.
Well.
And your father would stay back in the village, did he? Just you.
By that time he died.
He died. On
that. But anyway. It's a big competition, And I passed the matriculation with the top class. In those days, you have got two classes, A and B. A is considered to be top-notch boys who could go to medicine, you could go on, yeah. And I, from a young age, I cannot bear the pain of the other, even the dogs and cats and all this. I wanted to heal it. So the instinct, the belief that you have to heal the pain. So I decided to join medical college.
Medical college. Were you, by that, are we talking 1949 or 1950 or?
Then I went, after the matriculation, I went to university.
Yeah, to study medicine.
We call it science.
Science, okay. Science,
biology, zoology, and all these logies.
But was there independence already?
Oh, yes. Yes. I passed a matriculation in 1953, and I went and I spent there 4 years in the Rangoon University, science,
right,
to prepare for medicine.
Right.
And other than that, I joined a medical college. I don't know whether it was luck or the destination. To learn medicine for 6 years, it costs money, yeah? So it becomes this medicine. Although I have the wish, the desire, and then the dynamic to learn the medicine, the resources, the money to support. In those days, a book, Harvey's book, cost 300 charts. 300 charts in the 1950s. It's a huge money.
Sure.
Huge money.
So these were English textbooks.
That's correct.
They're very expensive.
Yes, yes. I cannot afford. But I'm already entrenched in the medical college and beginning to dissect the human cadavers. In those days, we still have Indians, you know, Lanchawalas and all this. They die on the street and they come to medical college for us to dissect. I begin to do already. Then, when I look into the future, without proper support, I know that I cannot continue. So I went to the headmaster of the medical college, Dr. Kokuji, and then on top of this headmaster is father-in-law of, he's also American man, Unewen's father-in-law. I can still remember after I have done all these karibas, he said, "Show me your hands." Hey, this guy, I don't know how, where they find, can be a good surgeon. Because after,
you have a very steady hand.
Obviously. Steady and then meticulous. Hey, could be a good surgeon. I was happy also. So I asked the college head, Dr. Kokuji, "Say, Ajit, can you give me 1 year leave?" He said, "What is that? 1 year leave? For what?" I have no money. I'm not ashamed. I need just some money. Give me 1 year, I will go out and work, save money and come back. He was, you know, I can see his face. He was not happy. All right, 1 year, come back, we can produce a good sergeant.
Are you 2 years off finishing? Is that all you had to go? How many years to finish?
Two.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Then I learned from the hindsight. Once you are committed, you have to push. Whether you like it or not, you have to push. So I went out and looked for a job. And there was an opening examination in the Ministry of Finance, Customs Service, you know, Customs, appraisers, they call it, assessors service. It is not a gazetted work,
yeah.
But it paid very well. So I joined it. From there, I never come back.
Oh, is there a regret there?
So, there is another life. With the customs, there is money, there is this, all these things, and corruption also. And I got married. You know, this woman, I got married. And began to have children. So it is, as I said, when you have your own determination, follow through. Hardship, go ahead, jump.
Sorry?
Once you change, there is another way, another life.
So you, looking back,
I
there was no option?
No, there's no option. I look back, but I'm now entrenched in another life.
You took another road.
That's right. If you ask whether it is good or bad, sometimes your fortunes lead you. You just follow the fortune, your destination. You wanted to create and make your own destination. There were lucky people, I call it lucky, but...
But in those first few years, did you think maybe I'll go back, or did you very quickly come to the conclusion that you'd taken a different path?
No, already by that time, I have got a new lifestyle.
Okay.
Although my dream is there. Yeah, sometimes dreams are dreams, no?
Right.
You cannot put them to reality.
And having had no money and suddenly having money.
That's true.
Yeah.
So, and then I have not, I'm not living alone, but, you know, the family and all this. Okay. So, then I said, this is your destiny. Follow it. Sometimes the fortunes change. It was 1958. I'm already in the customs more than 5 years.
25 years old.
Yes, yes. And then the military took over 1958, another coup d'etat.
Yeah.
The head of the coup d'etat, who is in charge of the customs, services, customs department, at a meeting of the people, and he said, no, to become an appraiser, they have an examination, very, very stiff examination. Out of 10, they choose only 3. Examination three went. So, 58, this man came, he said, this is very crude, no? Soldiers, their language. I really don't know. Maybe I'm a bit prejudiced. They thought with these pips and the gun, and they can say what they like. And then his name was So Mia Thing.
Was he a colonel or?
Colonel. They send all these colonels to all these departments. First coup d'etat, 58. And he said, hey, you all are thieves. Come on, there's another way. So it touched us.
Because you weren't. And
no, we are not.
Rude and,
no. Yeah. And then three of us, my batch, and so we said, because they thought that whatever they say, people will absorb and become quiet. But there were a few souls who can oppose.
What, three of you put your hands
yes.
up?
Yes. Yeah. No, this expression of feet is wrong. We don't agree to this. It was. And then the head of.
You're young and brave.
Not only brave, but we don't care.
You don't care.
We don't care. Because what is not correct, somebody must say that not correct. You can call it brave, but brash also. Some said, hey, come on. They are with a gun. If you cannot resist all this, then you are forever, you become a slave. So, we head up. You know, here comes my fortune change. The head of the custom, a very nice gentleman, that he invited three of us in this room, said, sons, you all are intelligent guys, don't waste your time, and don't fight these people. You will suffer. So try to find other jobs. I said, why not? And I don't know where to find another job. Because with the customs, I'm already established. And there is enough money, legal money, and sometimes illegal. Corruption. So I was waiting, and then one day, here comes luck. My classmate, former classmate, who was working in the immigration, he knew about this. And then he came, hey, why don't you join the foreign service? I didn't even don't know foreign service. I thought I was mixed with the forest service. Forest service means staff, tall, and all this. Must be ready to walk in a hardship post in the forest and all this. I told him. I was confused. Hey, look at me. It's a 5'3". And then in those days, I was the uncle and become a forest officer. No, stupid. I am telling you, foreign service. I said, what is foreign? You will be sent out to embassy. He said, then I see, I heard about this, but I'm not interested. Foreign service. And then this man passed away, a very close friend of my classmate. He filled all the forms, and then deposit money in the bank. And hey, gentlemen, you sign here. The rest I will do. He did. When the time comes for exam, you know.
Yeah, Forest Service exam.
Public Service Commission. Okay. Very high organization. Very proper. So I went examination. For me, it's nothing for me. Then out of 500 or 300, I don't know. And then they choose 8. And then they interview. So,
a few hundred, they chose 8 people.
Yeah, 8. And then we were interviewed. And yeah, well, I will tell you the interview by this very intelligent people from the chairman of Public Service Commission. And then when I enter the interview, Baiba interview, I was a little bit brash, because according to the rules, I must go there and then report I am so-and-so, and then I must sit only when they tell me to sit. The permanent secretary of Foreign Office, and then his assistant, and then from this commission side, the chairman and another two, they were the one who will interview me. So I, looking back, I told them that, like I do now, I am a jungle man. I come from a village, starting to write English in Burmese alphabet, cat and chow. They were a little bit. The permanent secretary was James Barrington. You might have heard about this man.
James
Barrington.
Barrington.
The military attache was, later he went back to Australia. Okay. So I was a little bit not polite. I sit as soon as I reach there. Hey, what is that? Then I told him, sir, my English stuck it like this. It will not be polished. It will be a little bucolic, rush, not refined. But I can refine this language, no problem. And they didn't ask me anymore. Here he to Mr. Barrington, family said, hey, they call it Jimmy. Jimmy, this is your boy. So the foreign office people focused, began to ask, what is my current knowledge of the Indonesian affair? For me, this is child's work. Okay, and then I went back to my old job. One day, my wife's mother called her daughter, and then the daughter, my wife, called me. Papa, is there any problem in your customs office? I said, why? There was some police came to the house. I have no serious problem, no criminal, no nothing. Later, I found out they come to check. Background check. And then here comes again a fortune. The leader of this intelligence group who came to the house for my background check becomes my high school friend.
We were friends together.
And then...
Luck.
Here comes fortune, I said. So, It is my life right then. I become all of a sudden, foreign service, diplomatic service.
What year are we talking now?
1960. Yes. So they transfer, they accumulated my service from the customs and then changed it to...
Were you excited? Were you... Was it just...
No, I was a little bit idiotic. I don't know.
What have I done?
What I have not only done, what I'm going to do. But when I was sent out, so 1960, 61, then they sent to training schools and all this. And then you must remember, 1962 is a critical period. Yeah. So we were sent to the training in the 1962, and was sent out to Israel.
So there was a coup, and Maywin took power in 1962.
That's correct.
You were sent as what, a junior diplomat to Israel?
Yes, a third secretary. And again, here comes luck or fortune. The ambassador there was, you might have heard, Brigadier General Mao Mao. And all this.
Yes.
He was ambassador. He was kicked out from the from Burma to Israel. And Israel is an island, a political island of the Indawa Hebrew, which nobody used. And then the people, the Jews, the 20th and 19th century Jews, young, dynamic, hard-working, and then, you know, I learned a lot.
Well, it was not long after its establishment. It was still a very young country then, Israel.
That's correct. And then General Mao Mao, ambassador.
Could you take your wife at that time?
Oh, yes, yes, the whole family.
Yeah.
Whole family. I had two children in Israel, because when we were transferred, my wife was pregnant. We found this is a new human race. Because, I must tell you, before foreign ministry chose me to go to Israel, one delegation came. It was Ben-Gurion.
Well, the founder of Israel.
He led a delegation. His son was there. Yeah. You know, I know. And then I was fortunate enough to be attached to this man.
To Ben-Gurion?
Yes.
Goodness. He's a young man. He's a general.
To be near this...
Could you feel the charisma of that?
Yes, dynamos.
Yeah.
And then with the UNU, he has a great respect to UNU. This is very memorable. And then UNU is UNU. He said he must appear in Burmese dress in the evening, and then he must go to the meditation center. Come on. Jews are Jews, no? They cannot go to any other religious center. But Ben-Gurion did it. Because otherwise, media in this country and his opposition we'll kill him, chop him. Ben-Gurion is such a character. At that time, he was already learning some Bali. Pali language.
Pali, yeah, the yes. language of Buddhism.
Yes, he was already learning.
Goodness gracious. So did you ever meet him again when you went to Israel? When you were posted to Israel, did you see him ever?
No, not him. His son and the group,
yeah.
the other group, including his counselor, political counselor, later became the president. No, I was attached to them and even sent out to the meditation center where they meditate. And one of them, I'm a Buddhist, but I never attempted to learn meditation. He told me, after 3 days meditation session, he's a young man, we are together in the same car. Are you a Buddhist? Yes, sir. Have you ever meditated? No. Do it. There's something. A Jew told me how, where to meditate. Come on, don't you think it is? It is. And when I met him in Israel, because every Independence Day we invited and we joy, we drink. I was here. My fortune turned around and then deposited in that direction in the name of diplomacy. And then I began to read and then study and then learn. And then at the close quarter discussions with my ambassador and then...
Who's Mama?
Mama.
So is he influential in your career after
that? Oh yeah, very much. Very much. Very much. Among the soldiers, if you ask me, which is the best? He's one. Even more than the General Nevin. When the Moshe Dayan came to call on the Mau Mau, General Mau Mau said, "Hey, young man, we will come sit here. Listen what we talk." I could see Dayan.
Wow, he had his patch by patch. What an experience.
Sharp. But it was before 1967 war.
Yeah.
I was there at the time of war. So for me, Second World War and then Israeli Arab War of 1967. Come on. How do you feel? How the a nation Israel at that time about 2 million, 2.5 million, mobilized the whole country. Quietly, but to be ready when the NASA declared. So, I began to learn a bit of, another thing is, we don't have multi-attaché. Bami is a multi-attaché. General Mau Ambassador tell to the military people, this young man is our honorary military attaché. Okay, you use him. So I was with them. I listened to what they talk, and in those days we sent many recruits for parachute, all this to Israel.
Oh, so training.
Yes, for training.
So what happened then? What's the next story post Israel? You came back?
I think they mean the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and others thought, I think, because nobody confirmed. They stayed me there, allow me to say, nearly 6 years. Our normal post is 3 years.
Yes.
3 years and it will take.
Did you get promoted to second secretary while
no,
you were there?
No, no. Maybe they found me useful. Go there. I'm okay, and then the head of the parachute corps became very close, like two families. whenever I request, he said, go ahead, go ahead. So we have many, you know, parachutists in the military who are trained in this way. One of these is, I think, if I may, I wanted to tell our soldiers how to prepare a war, a winning war. All the able-bodied girls and boys, yeah, and then to replace their work in the agriculture, in the administration. The younger children, some of them are children. For example, in the postal service, so where in those days, the telegram, 3 o'clock, 2 o'clock, cring, 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 and then a girl and a boy, sir, telegram, hey, what is that? Our duty, sir. I never miss a meal. So, and not only that, they have dedication. My driver was, he's they have got five men team or demolition team. So he said, sir, I must go to war. Hey, no, we can ask the foreign ministry essential service. So they are exempted from military service. He said, sir, please. The five boys, we worked together for so many years. The last final connection, I did it. They can also do it, but I will feel good. He went. He was a human Jew. Because in Israel, there are many Jews from all over the world. He was a human Jew. Talmud, they call it, in Hebrew, they call it Talmud Jew. I was so sad. Like I was like my son. They were very close with my children. I thought he might not come back. He might come back. After the war, 1 week or 10 days, he came with this small surgery. Sir, is there my job still open? Hey, come on. This is the type of the Arab must fight if they want to do that.
So what happened to your career post-Israel?
Okay. Then from Israel, they said, I got near, I'm talking about our sojourn in Israel. And then there, from there we went, we were sent to London.
Maybe, direct transfer?
Yeah, transfer. Maybe as R&R, rest and recreation. One thing I wanted to emphasize is in Israel, during these 6 years, my children were formative ages. I sent to Jewish school because there were some missionary schools, English, but they are expensive. They are expensive, so I cannot afford.
Yes, of course not.
So I sent the nearest Hebrew and Bnei Brak.
Oh my goodness.
You will be. My son, the one, the owner of this Shaki restaurant, he went there. Within a month or two, he began to bring all these guys with his hat, and he began to talk the Hebrew.
Orthodox Jews.
Orthodox, very Orthodox. But eyes are bright. They are very slim, but this is how I started my diplomatic career.
So was that your most, you know, like that the most formative of all your posts? Was that the most important to you? The time is
for me, yes. Shall we say like this? First post or first impression are very, very important. If I were sent, for example, to Bangladesh or to, among the easygoing people, I will not grow. My children will not grow intellectually. But there, everybody is
driven.
Driven. all driven, or they themselves are in the psyche. They built a psyche. Hard work, very hard work.
So you got posted to London?
To London, and I stay there, and then come back to Sri Lanka again.
But you did, you never came back. You got cross-posting every time.
That's true.
Isn't that unusual?
I think they find me a bit of a useful.
Right.
And then Sri Lanka, and then come back. And then I stay some years, and from here to Switzerland. This is
UN, the which post in,
yes,
New Zealand?
Yes. In the Switzerland, Geneva. No, originally, here comes, Shelby. No, you have...
No, I'm fine.
Originally, I was supposed to go to Peking, China. China in those days, no? We have no such respect for Chinese. Yeah, like every Chinese. It is post Deng Xiaoping period. They begin to grow, movement. But we don't, we thought we have nothing to learn from them. But anyway, foreign ministers, admin chief said, hey, look, you are going to Peking. Why not? So I even told my wife, Mama, you stay here with the children, finish their education, I will go. It is a good place for saving money. We call it Moscow and then Beijing.
Hardship post.
It is not hardship. This is a cushy
post. Compared to here. Here's a hardship post.
That's, here comes. The ambassador at the captain, the former military captain, was ambassador. And when he saw me, he knew that he cannot work with me. He's just nitwit, nothing. In those days, there were some postings from the military intelligence.
MI.
Yeah, MI. And then when they saw me, the way they is such a senior man and very intelligent man. I don't need a man of this caliber in Peking. Lifetime.
Change again. So you would have gone as what, minister, counselor? Was that what your position would have been?
No, first secretary.
First secretary then, okay.
So I was sent to Switzerland. Within a week, my children sent to the French school, Swiss schools, and now after they come back, this is the language, their second
French.
Mother, their French. Yeah. So at least, if I was sent to China,
it was luck again.
Again, they're huge. Yo, Peter. These energies, these forces are working. Some of the materialist people wanted to touch and calculate, put into their equations of life, but they are working. These energies are still
separate to us.
We are living, I call it, we are a particle of in the energy soup. Now, the cosmic energy is such a future. We knew, and then we trying to capitalize only a few percentage, 4-5%. The rest, 95%, are unknown. But we are living with this. So that who knows how this is working. We are trying to find out how they work. But the human beings are still, they came down from the trees only about how many years, you know? We are only...
early stages of development, please.
Primates,
yeah.
You know, primates. Sometimes our thinkings are much lower than primates.
No doubt. So the military, by this stage of your career, were in all many of the ambassadorial positions.
I met ex-military is Mau Mau, and another one is Thein Do. These were close to the early military, General Aung San's.
Not to the Nay Win.
Oh, no. Nay Win, yes. With Nay Win, then Mau Mau, Aung Ji, and even then Thein Do interests. The Baltic interest influence clash. So he kicked out this.
And made them ambassador.
Yes. Very intelligent. Very intelligent.
Who?
Mama. We, the international community, he was always sent to United Nations as a delegate. They call him Mau Mau. You know, what is that? African leader. M-A-U, Mau Mau.
Oh, Mau Mau. Yeah. Mau Mau in Mau Mau. Kenya.
Yes, Kenya.
Yeah.
You know that?
Yeah.
He's known as...
Probably because he's tough.
Very tough. He could talk to anybody, doesn't care. Oh, I must put, you know, the formal teaching, learning of English is limited, but I self-made. I read a lot and talk a lot, and then when I was sent to Geneva, I have to look after disarmament affairs, which is when you see from outside, it is so disarmament. And then one time, when the ambassador cannot come from Paris, he said, "Nguyen, don't you chair the committee 21." 21 members. Huge, intelligent guys, ambassadors. Why not? I was just a first secretary. Russian, I still remember his ambassador, Israelium. His name is Israelium. And he might have felt the Jewish blood.
Yeah.
Israelium and all this. Fighting across the East, Americans, Pakistan, the Indians. Here I am, Mr. Nguyen, with a griva, who learned his English. Ket, kajie, kada ket, and I began to talk. You know, if you ask me, how do you feel? Are you intimidated by these giants? No way. No way. I feel so confident. From the beginning, I said, "Gentlemen, my ambassador cannot join because he must see the president in Paris. So I'm sitting in his place. But the rules are the same. When you are given 6 minutes, don't past 6 minutes. Israelium is a long document. Otherwise, I will deduct. You will get 6 minutes. If you pass this limit, you will get 5 minutes. I will. And finally, if you repeat this, you will have nothing. This is the ground rule. Do you agree?" They have nothing. They have to agree.
Was Utang the UN when you were there, when you were a diplomat? Utang.
No, that was much earlier.
Much earlier.
But in New York.
Okay.
It was in New York. I'm talking about the European theater.
Okay. But what year are we talking? You're in Geneva, roughly.
Geneva. 1976, seven. No. 1980, because I have to cover Vienna also, narcotic and all this from Geneva to Vienna to look to attend. So it is a multilateral diplomacy. So 81. So it was earlier. Must be. I've got my records. So must be
roughly.
Yeah, roughly.
Late 70s.
Yes. No, late 70s.
So was your career affected by the military junta or not affected? Or
affected very much.
If you want to talk about it.
No. Then they sent out, originally, when the Foreign Service was a little bit infiltrated by so-called political appointees, like Mao Mao, Lindo, and all this. General Ne Win said, Bavelli, don't infiltrate Foreign Service because it is our first line of defense. If you have somebody who's intelligent and language and all these things, yes. If not, don't just come. And they begin to use it. The multi-intelligence begin to send there. Because in the military, when they reach major rank, they cannot go up. It is a block. So they begin to send out.
There are not so many jobs to get from major to colonel.
That's
difficult.
That's true. And then they send out all these, so we call it parachute diplomats.
Parachute diplomats.
They jump in front of you.
Yeah.
And then these are idiots. They don't know. This is a short life.
So what was the, towards the end of your career, you finished where? Your overseas postings was in Geneva, or
yes, and then Geneva, then I was sent again to Italy. Italy again, do there many multilateral conferences, economic FAO,
but not as ambassador to Italy, but doing the multilaterals.
Yes, FAO. Again, I worked there as a second man. Okay. And these are, by that time, the military has already a good grip on this plum post. This and their boy, old boys.
Paratroop.
Yeah, paratroop diplomats. They themselves call it political appointees, no? And then, it degraded. They were sent there to draw a good salary, that's all. Never ever they raised their voice.
They're soldiers, right?
Soldiers, ex-soldiers.
Yeah, but they're still soldiers,
that's
if you know what I mean.
That's right. They without command,
yeah.
Without they don't want to move, they don't want to risk. Can I say in one word, they are opportunists. Opportunists. Wherever there is fortune, they would jump.
But you must have come back here because you were Kin Mung Lin's boss, I think, at one stage.
In the foreign ministry.
So you came back to the foreign ministry.
Oh, no. Here comes again the... a break in 1988.
Student.
Uprising. At that time, I was in Rome embassy. And the ambassador was an ex colonel. He was sent just to get a good salary. That's all. so I cannot walk. In Italy, I could accomplish something like this. I was in some years in Italy, and I began to establish friends. And then I began to know inner workings of Italian foreign ministry and then cooperatives. Then I began to focus on the training aspect of Burmese technicians, particularly leather technology. As you know,
which technology? Leather. Leather, yes, leather. Yes.
Italy is in the top class. So I began to have friends with him, and then again I found from these Italian friends that we have about 27 applicants for leather technology lying without action. So I asked him, what is that? Ah, from here, from the government side, the Italian side must offer. And then from the Italian side, you know, the robots, we must ask. So this is a technica. And then it has been lying for years. So I ask, here comes a breakthrough. I ask the Italian cooperative minister, not the ministry, but only the chief, what can I do? The moment you ask, can you help us in this leather technology? We are ready. We have already apportioned the budget. Instead of the Ministry of Industry, I, as a head of the embassy or representative of the state, can I accept? I said, no problem. You are representative of your country. We will accept. So immediately I said, and then, yeah. Within a week, he became active. So what they do? They give me acceptance without the industry ministry asking. So egos, Peter. This is egos. It's very stupid. So I said it. And then I tell, it is, you may call it a white lie, but I inform foreign ministry to industry. The Italian cooperative ministry accepted. Here is the acceptance letter. I said, within a month, it was in around 1988. Then a bullet died, and this in 27 people. My idea is like this: we send, one head of delegate and come back lost, because here nobody recognized. Here I sent from the deputy manager of the factory to the one who cut the leather. One team. So they know the language. If what the leather cutter is doing, the boss. So this is my team. It works. It works.
The Ministry of Industry didn't like it.
No. They like it because they don't know how to break the ice. So they send their own boys also. Right. No? They include. It works well. Here comes in 1988. I was happy. And then it's a sort of achievement, no? Without harming anybody. And then it works. They got a good salary, good stipend, But after 88, this ministry collapsed. All these technicians were dispersed, lost. Sad story.
Many sad stories.
So, Peter, this is more or less in the 1988, 89, 90. I was a bit involved. This you wanted to include in your written report or not, this is up to you. I was a bit involved in the agitation, you know, against the government. A government servant involved in the activities against the government, it is sort of a crime, no? They sacked me.
But while you were in Rome? Were you in Rome still, or no, you were back?
I was
here?
Called back.
You were back.
I was called back. And then within a year, 1990, much earlier than they expected, they said, you are retired. They call it forced to retire with the, all this pension and all the. But I have already started my business by that time, foreseeing
what was going to happen.
Yeah, what happened. I put down my children and all this, and then myself in the business. So I said, yeah, what business will be? I checked with my friends. There were only a few. Timber, rice, what did Burma produce?
Like this.
Oh, yes. I've got some friends in Italy and all this. When they heard I'm a retired, hey, Nguyen, when don't you do some business? I told him, I am already a businessman then, you know. So, now I do, I'm now the 85, 86.
But you're also involved in, you know, like organizations like with Kim Mang Ming, right?
No, he asked me to join, you know.
This is part of your withdrawal that you're saying. But,
that's, yeah. No. When you are working with other people, if they are intelligent and they are deep thinkers and then for the good of the people, why not? But they talk, and they talk, we win. I'm a good, I'm a superior, yeah. No way. So I did...
You're your own man.
My own, and then out of this benefit, I share with the people.
I want to ask you one last question, which I haven't asked anyone else, but I think I will in the future. If you were knowing that your great-grandchildren are listening to this tape in 40 years' time, what would be your message to them about how they should live their life? What should they do? Are there any key messages from your life that you would leave for the generations to come?
Okay, I started already talking about what your popo, your grandpa, my youngest son's daughter, the only daughter.
Five sons and one daughter.
Yes,
and 13, 11 granddaughters.
Yes.
Yeah.
Out of 11, I could see three can outgrow me. I always tell them that you always try to outgrow your father, your mother, and your grandpa, your great. Don't submerge underneath and disappear, never. That is my message to them, and they work hard. For example, my daughter's daughter in Switzerland, the only daughter, and then her daughter also. She married a Greek, you know, a Greek businessman. Hey, Greek. Greek culture, he said, something old and inside. I thought the Greek culture, it's a submerged and just no. Of course, it began to age. The Greek culture began to age. No way to stop it. But still, the idea which has started a long time ago, it is still living. And I found in my granddaughter, Greco-Burman daughter. They are quick to learn.
Yeah, I think a lot of kids are
quick, very quick. They will be coming in July.
July.
Yes. And then she already asked my wife, Papa, Grandma, trying to find somebody to teach me in Burmese.
Wow. To add English and, well, probably French and it's Greek.
French,
and Greek, English.
Yes, Greek already.
Yeah.
English and French. No, but one of the very good. We wanted to know the inside of our blood. You know? For this is good.
Two ancient civilizations.
Yes. My message to them will be to go ahead, grow, and then share with the people, whoever.
Udnyay Win, thank you very, very much for your time this morning.
Okay.
And just as, I mean, unfortunately this is not video, but, you know,
you take a photo.
I will take a photo, but just, I can only describe, you've built this beautiful home out of teak with vaulted ceilings and huge pieces, teak beams running across it, and it's just so light and airy, and thank you so much for inviting me into your home.
It's my pleasure. And give them message to those whoever wanted to know about this country. It's been a small piece of personal history, going back to 1933. How people in the city, hardworking, can make it. When I went out to 1962 outside, we went here from Mangaladong International Airport, second after Narita. It is always a weakness, and then we don't foresee, and then the soldiers are soldiers, they are not enlightened soldiers. And this, my mother, she is from the militaristic, she likes soldiers' discipline. When to stay, when to wake up, what to do, you know? She wanted me to also to join military, to learn the discipline. So her sons sent her to resistance and all this. She said, go ahead, you must do what you are supposed to do.
Well, you've had a wonderful, wonderful career, and as I say, thank you for your time this morning.
Okay, take care.
Thank you.
Take care.